Hey, JW here with some do hard stuff. And I've got somebody from the Star Wars film here. Gary Bird. Wait a minute. Not really. It's not really Chewbacca. That is Gary Bird. What's going on, Gary?
What up? Good to see you. Thanks for having me on. Excited to talk to your audience today.
Yeah, man. You know, it's always fun, especially we get somebody who's obviously in that same kind of business that we're in, and the dental business. And Gary, how did you get into this? First of all, tell us a little bit about your background, but then how did you get in the dental side of this as well?
So it's such an interesting topic, and this comes up all the times. So everybody who's in the dental industry who's not a dentist is here by accident. So no one ever says, man, I'm going to start a marketing company for dentists when I grow up, right? Like that, no one's ever uttered those words before. So there's a lot in most businesses in the dental industry, that's how it started. Usually people got into the dental industry by accident. So meaning something happened, they got a referral, they started working with the dentist, and then they saw how amazing the industry was and started to learn about it and saw it as an opportunity, and then continued from there. And I'm no different. We started working with our first dentist many years ago. They went from $90,000 a month in production to over $400,000 a month in production from one dentist to four dentists. And in a super competitive market, referred a bunch of people to us. And we realized right away, it was like, man, there's a great opportunity here. There's it's underserved. And so we niched down. And since then, we've niched down multiple times and trying to, you know, service the people that we can help the most. And really it boiled down to right now, it's the private practice. And we were kind of talking about this before you hit record. You have a private practice and then you have private equity money. And the private practices are backed by banks and loans, and they get to operate the way that they want to operate, usually putting the patient first, where then you have private equity folks and they move into the industry and they have a whole different set of agendas. And there's a whole debate if private equity is good for medicine or not. That's a separate conversation. Nonetheless, we service the little guy, the guy that is trying to level the playing field. Maybe they don't have as big of a budget as the private equity guys, but they still want to compete in their local market. And so that's who we serve. We help the little guy beat the big guy in marketing and getting more new patients. The interesting thing about it is there's an abundance of new patients out there. There's an abundance. There's actually more new patients than there are doctors and hygienists to service them. The problem is that there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of, let's just say, operational restraints, which you guys know a lot about. And so what we do is we help come in and make sense of a lot of that and help them understand what they need to do to be able to compete.
Yeah, and I think, look, go back to your first statement. I think it's really true. I mean, I've got a degree in criminal justice and a master's in public administration. And what anything to do with dental, it was just a reality of necessity. And, you know, after this many years now in the dental, 30 plus, you realize it's a very stable market, very resilient to any type of ups and downs with the economic woes. I mean, we see that, but people are still going to get their teeth done, still going to get them clean. They're going to get the work they need. So it's very resilient to any kind of, whether it's, you want to call it a recession, depression, blip on the screen. It's always been pretty good. But, you know, I think too, going back to what we were talking about before we hit record here, it's about finding your niche in a business, whether that's in the dental or whether that's in anything else. I think too many times people start a business and they want to be everything to everybody, right? They're catering to, oh yeah, you want us to do that. And maybe initially that's needed, that you kind of have to shoot darts in a lot of different directions, maybe the old shotgun approach, until you find what really works for you, right? That is one key to it. But once you get really rolling and started, then you start to say, you know what, we don't do that. Or, oh, I'm sorry, we don't service larger markets like a DSO. Well, maybe we do mid-sized DSOs, or maybe we do individual practices, but you really can't be everything to everybody in the business. Or I'm going to be in the dental, and I'm going to be in the vet, and I'm going to be in the chiropractor. I'm going to be in all these things, because I think it's called, really difficult.
It is really difficult. So it's called TAM, Total Addressable Market. And dentists really struggle with this, and every entrepreneur struggles with this, I think, up front, because we always think the world is smaller than it is, right? We always start off and we're like,
yeah,
are people going to want this? Are people going to want this service? So I better cater to everybody. But the problem is when you cater to everybody, you cater to no one. And it really becomes, you really just become mediocre. That's really what you're doing. It's like the government, you know what I mean? They're mediocre yeah, at everything, yeah. At best, yeah, so. Right? Because they're trying to service elderly, the young, the poor, the rich, like they're trying to service to everybody. And you become mediocre when you do that. And so what really helps, and whether you're a dentist or an entrepreneur, like, or what you guys do, is that when you find that person that you can really help and you begin to talk to them and you begin to say, hey, that's the person we want to help, you're able to help a lot more people, because people hear that and they go, oh, you're solving my problems. And it's just much more relatable. And it's not that you, it's not that we couldn't someday become a marketing company for optometrists or med spas or something like that, because we could, because a lot of the operations are the same, but none of my messaging would work, right? If I got on here and it's like, hey, I work for med spas, all the dentists instantly turned me off, like instantly. But if I say, hey, I help dentists who are privately owned and have a loan with a bank and are putting their patients first, and to compete against the private equity folk, instantly I relate to them, because they're like, dude, that's me. And I want somebody who understands me. And because I'm able to speak that way, they're more apt to listen. And so it gets tricky. I know you guys do a good job of, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, basically you have like an umbrella brand, and then you have other brands in each niche that you go and service that are particular to that particular industry, right?
Yeah, we'll do a little bit. I mean, we've got some other verticals, but it's really interesting. You know, those are very, very niche. For instance, we do some work in the debt reconstruction, debt consolidation industry, with these companies that are helping people to reduce their debt level, and they just need people that can be customer service and helpful and process information. But it's really small, so we're not out there just blowing it up with any type of advertising. I don't deal with it a lot. We got a couple of people that handle that, but it's good for us. It may be, you know, 100 people or so that are working in that industry, but it's very niche. And you mentioned something too. It's also hard to talk. It's also hard to speak into an industry that you're not an expert in, right? You and I know dental, and I can go do chiropractor work, but I mean, we can support chiropractors in our remote virtual teams, but to do that, I've got to learn new terminology. I've got to learn new processes. How does the front office work? Where are their struggles? Because you know as well as I do, when you're in a business, you're really just, the bottom line is that, and our salespeople forget to, for we call them solutions agents, you know, but they forget to think, you're really solving a problem. What's your problem? Oh, I got a solution for that. That's what it is. It's not, I'm going to sell you all these things, right? You don't go to a car lot and they show you every single model on there. They're trying to say, what are you looking for? And I'm looking for an SUV. Okay, well, let me show you the SUVs, right? You don't go show them now the station wagons and the vans and everything else. So I think it's, if they still make station wagons, do they still make station wagons? Is that even a brand? So, yeah. Is that a thing?
I think so.
It's not
a brand. It's like a body style. Yeah, they do. I saw one yesterday. I saw like Cadillac. It was a Cadillac station.
Oh,
wagon.
Yeah, they do. That's right. Yeah.
The different, there's a couple of different companies that still make, it's not a vehicle. It's a body style. It's like an SUV. Yeah.
It's like kind of like an SUV. Lots of people. Maybe they just call them SUVs now.
No, you'd still call them station wagons. Yeah. It's like a hatchback. So you got SUVs, hatchbacks, station wagons. And then lots of different people make them. Those are body styles.
I'm going to research into where that name came from. Station wagon. We're going to have to wagon. Think through
so
that.
You could fit your family. You could fit your all your stuff, your bikes. It was basically pre-SUVs. I don't think there was SUVs back then.
It was expanding a car. That totally went off. But marketing, there it kind of came back to the marketing thing. Like, where did you come up with that? That's exactly right. Well, so one of the things that made me think about this, when you talk about getting into a business, we talk a little bit about this, and we call this do hard stuff. And what is it? whether it's physical or whether it's business or family. You know, I always say marriage is hard, right? To be in a marriage is difficult. I'm past 30 years now, and it's still hard, right? You still have to work on it. Being in business is really hard. I would ask that question: what is the hardest part about being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, starting a business? In your opinion, where is that difficult level at?
That's a good question. So it depends. So when you initially start, it's preconceived notions. So let me give you some that you'll laugh at. I'm going to start a business so I can work whenever I want, right? And it's just like, yeah, you can work whenever you want. You get to work all the time now, right? Where before you only work 9 to 5, right? I want to start a business because so I can control my destiny. Yep, you can control your destiny. You get to be stressed out about your bills because 1 month you did really good and the next month you didn't, right? And we're at a steady job. You just don't have that problem, right? So there's all these preconceived notions. There's like the whole meme of like the marketing guy sitting on the beach with a laptop just kind of working away. It's like, not really, right? Now you can build those things, but there takes a lot of time, money, energy, resources, and it's really, really hard. So that's at the beginning. And that stops a lot of people from starting is the fear. So the hardest part about business is actually starting. Then from there, the next hard part, like for me at least, was, okay, now I'm doing this and I'm doing okay, but I want to do better. And how am I going to lead people to do better? And you actually have to level up as an individual, which is very humbling. You know, we all think we have our stuff together until we realize we don't, right? And so it's like, oh man, I got to learn how to treat people better. I got to learn how to communicate better. I got to learn how to ask things better. I got to learn how not to get mad. You know, a lot of early on business for me was just figuring out like my team sucks. And it was like, no, you suck. You're a bad leader, right? Like they would do fine in a better environment. It was just, you weren't creating the right environment. So then you learn about those things and then you grow. And then the next stage is like, you know, there's a risk to growing, right? So it's like,
right.
How much risk are you willing to take? Because when I was younger and I wanted to grow, I was like, stink, I can't make payroll right now, but I want to keep growing. And I think the sales next month will make up for that. I literally put payroll on my credit card. Like I ran my own credit card through the machine, put the money into my account.
Done that.
It's probably a federal crime or something like that, but whatever, right? Like it was just like, okay, cool. I just needed to make payroll, right? Well, I can't, when payroll is $500,000, can't really do that, right? Like
doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like stink. So it's like, okay, so at what point do you want to stop playing this growth game and you want to create stability? And you know, and that's hard because I don't want to settle. Like I know I can do better. I know we can do better. And then there's, you know, there's different levels. There's like, you start to get into politics, and I don't mean politics literally, but there's this, like, when you first start, it's just like, you're happy. And you love everybody and you're just out there trying to get clients and no one's really worried about you because you're smaller. Right. But as you grow, the competition becomes very clear. They're trying to actively stop you while you're trying to actively grow. And then if you're friends with these people, they're not friends with these people. And you can ignore it. Some people are like, well, I just ignore that. I don't play those games, which is fine. But it does come at a cost to either play or not play the game. Everybody's playing the game to some degree. So it just depends on where you're at. That's kind of where I'm at, is that I'm at the stage of like, okay, so how do I predictably grow consistently? That's the stage we're at right now. Predictably grow. I'm good. I've done the explosive growth thing. It's really fun to 5X the company. It's also very stressful. At the stage I'm at now, if I was to do that again, like if it happened, if it didn't work, I'd probably go out of business because of the scale that we're playing at. And so then it's like, okay, well then how do we predictably grow without catastrophic loss and downside and all that kind of stuff? So that's kind of where I'm at. And that's,
yeah, you know,
hard. That's hard.
I would say that's, it's hard moving to every level too. And I would go back and say, one of the most difficult things is when you start a business, and you know, I mean, my business was me, right? I started it and I thought, okay, I'm going to run this thing. And what's really hard is changing your mindset when you have to start delegating too. I think that is, to me, an entrepreneur, kind of that high D personality, somebody who's driven, they think they can do everything better than everybody else, right? That was me. I'm like, oh, I need to do that because I do that the best. Oh, let me pay the bills. Oh, let me do this. So I think number one is learning to delegate better. And I think that's something people do a horrible job at, especially at when you get to an executive level where you have a bigger company. It gets harder and harder. And I also think as you grow, we've experienced some of that recently where we're growing, but we're realizing some of the people we have in leadership cannot make that change to the next level. They love it when we have 100 employees. They don't like it when we have 500 employees. They've gone, wait a minute, this is tough. I think that was one of the hardest about being in for me. Even now, I still struggle with that. And the more people you have, the harder it gets. The things you can't be involved in that you would like to. But it's funny you mentioned about the credit card thing. That must be a common thing because I can't tell you how many times I was like, okay, if I slide this through and I put $5,000 on there to cover my payroll, I got to pay a 3% fee. Oh, that's no big deal at all, right? I got that covered. And then you're just waiting for that payment to come through to pay the credit card down. Hopefully you don't have to do that again. And then you end up doing it again. And yeah. So if you haven't gone through those pains, and look, I've been totally bankrupt and broke in the late 90s. And I tell people all the time, greatest experience I ever had because you learn so much from it. But man, if you're not ready to go through it, it's tough. And that other thing you said, I actually mentioned it the other day. I was talking to Santosh Patel. And I said, I love it because people think that, oh, you get to work your own hours, you can travel when you want to, you do whatever you want to. And I'm like, yeah, and those usually mean like 16-hour days. So
that's a great example. It's like, I used to think traveling seemed really cool. Like, yeah, traveling's going to be great. But now I'm like, I want to avoid traveling as much behind. As possible. Yeah, and it's hard. You know what I mean? It's hard on my family and da 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 da. So yeah, you got to kind of pick your poison, right? You got to be careful what you wish for. And that's the hard part about entrepreneurship is like you kind of ask for all of it at the beginning and then you figure out, you know, the other thing you brought up a good point is that, yeah, people aren't going to like you. There's going to be a group of you. We all tell the story like, I'm going to start this business and it's going to be so good. Everybody's going to love me. It's like, there's going to be people that don't like you. And as you change, so I've had this one, Gary, you've changed as an employer, and it's like, well, yeah, I hope so, right? Like,
I had to.
Yeah. And it's like, I remember when we went from like quick growth to like, okay, now we need to stabilize the company. A lot of people didn't want to work with us anymore as team members because, and I didn't realize it in the middle of it, but I realized it afterwards. It was like, oh, like they enjoyed the loosey goosey. Like we don't have a lot of rules and just go figure it out. But now we have all the structure and accountability. Not everybody likes that. And I totally get it. Like I probably wouldn't like it if I was on the opposite end of it. And so, you know, and other people like all the structure and accountability, right? Like some people love that and they don't like the loosey goosey. So there's like different people are going to be attracted to you at different stages. And your job is to develop. And you have to be okay with that. If you're not okay with that and that gets in your head, it really messes you up. And, you know, something that kind of helped me with that was Elon Musk. So Elon Musk, when he first started making Teslas, and they still have some of these issues, there was these huge gaps in the panels of the car. Huge, though. It was way, way worse than they are now. And the car people just ripped them to shreds. Just like ripped them like, now, I loved my Tesla. I was like, this is great. And I'm like, I don't care if this gap's slightly bigger than that one. I can't even tell with my eye. You know what I mean? I can't even. But the car industry just ripped them to shreds. There's amateur work, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just sitting there going, man, but I love this car. Like, I love it. It's fun to drive. It's fast. You know, it's I don't have to go to the gas station. I just plug it in my house at night. And then you got all the gas haters and all those things. And I was like, if this guy's at like the top of the game, he's like one of the, probably the best entrepreneur ever. Probably he's like Thomas Edison level. You know what I mean? Inventor / entrepreneur, richest man 100%. In the world at one point. And he's getting all this hate and I can still sit here and love the product. then who am I? Of course people are not going to like me, right? Like, I'm like a smidget of that. So I realized it's part of the game. It comes, it's a package deal. Unless you're a scientist and you're just going to discover cancer cures, it's part of the biz.
Well, I think too, it's like I heard about the years ago about the preachers who try to please everybody in the congregation, right? That doesn't work, because that means you're everything to everybody. You're going to say something that offends somebody. And in running a business, everybody's not going to like the way you're running the business. I think the other thing about a business too is whatever you think is your break-even point, just double it. Yeah. And that's probably what it really is. I remember when we were kicking off ZymWorks Support DDS back in 2017, we did some models and we're like, hey, this is great. Our break-in's at about 28 to 30 people. You know, as soon as we get 30 team members, we got to cover. We got to about 35 and we're like, well, wait a minute. Okay, it's not 30. It looks like it's maybe 50. Got to 50. And it literally, Gary, we weren't profitable until we were almost at like 150 people. And it, that cheese kept moving, right? And you're like, oh, well, it's over there. So I always, when people are starting a business, I'm like, first of all, your expenses are going to be twice what you thought they had. Secondly, it's going to take twice as long for you to get to whatever you said. And third, you're going to have to work twice as many hours as you ever thought you were going to have to work. So if you're okay with that number being a little bit rough, then you can do it. But it's hard, right? It's just really hard.
Yeah, it is. It is really, it's just tough. So it's not for everybody. Entrepreneurship, I think it's a lot more acceptable. Like, I think when you were a kid, entrepreneurship was almost like, oh, you're a loser. You're just not going to go to college and start a business. You know what I mean? Like, it was very, when I was in high school, they were like, no, Gary, you have to go to school. You have to go to college. And I was like, I don't want to do that. I want to just go do something else.
Yeah.
And that, all I know is that's not what I want to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. And everybody was like, no. I think now it's much more acceptable. But I also think that people are a lot mental toughness is not as rampant. There's less people that are mentally tough. And so you end up, you got to be mentally tough if you're going to grow a business. Like, you have to.
Yeah. I think most people aren't willing to. You said, you know, earlier we were talking a little bit about it. We said, people love the idea of, oh, you work when you're on hours, you travel when you want to, you do this, you expense all your expenses and you travel. It's like, yeah, some of that's true. But the reality is most people aren't willing to make the sacrifice. And I think that's what this do hard stuff is about. It's about, are you willing to make those? Look, it's like in, you've been married a long time as well. It's like in your marriages, right? I mean, it's easy just to quit when you get to something. So, oh, man, we're not getting along, so I quit. That's the easy way out, right?
So my kids, one of my kids came to me, was like, oh, so the company pays for your car, right? And I'm like, well, yeah, it's a business expense. What do you think it's a good idea? Could they pay for my car? And I was like, no, because you don't own the business. It wouldn't be a business expense, right? And it's like, well, don't you think it's a good idea that I have somebody pay for my car so I have a free car? I'm like, it's not a free car. That money's coming from somewhere. Oh. It's a tax.
I was gonna say, ultimately, somebody paid for this. Right? There's a problem here. Yeah.
But there's a misconception, right? It's like, well, no, it's a tax loophole that I'm saving 20, 30% on the taxes. So I'm not taking the income. I'm not taking the money as income. I'm taking it straight to an expense. So I do save some money, but I didn't make any more money, right? Like, it's not free money by any stretch of the means. And it's like, I think that's what people get mixed up about, right? It's like those funny memes that you see, those videos that are like, well, it's a business write-off. And it's like, well, where's the money coming from? Oh, it's a business write-off. And it's like, I don't think you understand what that means. I just think that people don't understand fundamentally what business actually means, because if you've been employees your whole life, then how are you going to know it? You know what I mean? Unless somebody teaches you. So I think that's where there's just a misunderstanding of the business world.
Yeah. And I think I think you're right. People need to spend some time and try to understand that before they start making those assumptions. Cause you're right. It is quite difficult. I have a really conservative accountant. He's been 30 plus years, 35 years maybe. And I'll always say, hey, I'm thinking about buying this new vehicle. I'm going to spend $50,000. What do you think? He goes, it's okay. It's only going to save you $15,000, but you got to spend 50, right? It's like you're only saving that 30% or so. So yeah, I think you're right. When you've seen that too. I love this when people will say, oh, Exxon, or you know, they'll mention, hey, Gary Bird bought a new yacht. It's a 80-foot yacht that he's got out in the Caribbean. They go, oh, he it's just a write-off for him. I'm like, what are you talking about? I mean, even if it was a business expense, you still had to have the money.
Yeah, the money. Yeah, yeah. Right. And you have to, yeah. People think that businesses are just piggy banks that you can just infinitely money glitch. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Well, it's good stuff. I think that we could, I could go on and on, but business is hard and you've experienced it. When did you start in business, Gary? When did you get started? Yourself, so, really, officially.
Yeah, yeah, what yeah. Year? So it was 2008, right before the market crash.
Oh,
so
wow. Good timing. People, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It actually worked out to be really good timing, but it was so scary because literally everybody, I was renting at the time. The guy that owned my house lost his house. Wow. And yeah, that I was renting from, and everybody I knew was either losing a house or a business. Like anybody ahead of me in life that I met was losing a house or a business. It was, and I'm just like, holy smokes. Like, what did I do? And like big businesses were shutting down during this time. And I just remember the housing market fell apart.
Housing market was a mess. Yeah. Yeah.
The housing market. And that's what drove the businesses to shut down because nobody had money. And it was just like, man. But I had a service. I was doing email marketing. So I was like, hey, I'll do all your email marketing for you for $200 a month. And I'll make your slowest day your busiest day. That was my sales pitch. And everybody was doing phone book at that time, which was very expensive. So I was a yeah. low cost alternative. And people hear email and they're like, oh, is that even a business? You got to remember back then, the POS systems didn't even have email set up inside of them yet. Email was largely only used for business use. Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It wasn't used for marketing.
Well, that was dial in. Yeah, you're talking about dialing in to check your email. That was not the advent of really fast email as well.
No. And then text messaging was not used for business yet because you still paid per text message and those kind of things. Yeah, so it wasn't viable. And then social media was only used for personal use. So the only way to reach your customers, if you wanted to reach out to them, was pick up the phone and call them, send them a postcard, which would have cost you $4,000 or $5,000, or you could email them. And so I created all these clients for $200 a month. And I knew that wouldn't last. I saw very quickly that like, this isn't going to last, this model. Because people will get software and it'll be cheap and easy and they'll do it out of their own POS systems, right? But eventually we started adding services. And so then became like more of a marketing company, but that's how I got started.
Yeah, crazy. Hey, look, I'm telling you, it's crazy how you get, mine was mostly out of necessity, but you know, and if I had any, of course I tell this to my kids all the time now, but if I had any advice for young people, for sure, it's like, hey, stay out of debt. You know, don't go buy a car you can't afford. Don't go put stuff on a credit card. Don't go, because, you know, I've done that. Been there, done that, looked up, had $100,000 owed on credit cards and was trying to figure out, well, how am I going to pay all this, you know? And yeah, and then you start thinking, wow, this is, you know, the interest rate was growing faster than you could imagine when you're paying. Yeah, you were paying $2,000 a month just in interest, right? And you're thinking, whoa, I can't even pay the interest. So I think that's cool. Well, Gary, it's been fun. I always enjoy it. I like to talk about how people get started. And you're obviously very well respected in the industry and the dental. And it's fun to get together. So two quick questions. You got a new truck too, right? You have a brand new Tesla
Speaking
truck.
Of I've seen going it. Into debt. Ooh. Yeah, going into debt. Yeah, that's that was a pretty penny. They did a 20. So what they did is they got 5 years ago. They're like, this new truck's coming out. It's going to change the world. It's going to be out in the next year or two. And so I signed up for it. And then I waited 5 years for it. And then they said, okay, do you want this truck now? And it's coming out. And I was like, yes. okay, you're gonna have to pay a $20,000 premium to be at the top of the line still. And I was like, oh, that's stinking. I was like, whatever.
Yes, yeah, yes, so, I got to be at the top of the line. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so I did it. But so I'm way upside down on it. I don't drive it a lot, but it's so much fun to drive. Like, there's no car like it. There's no car like it.
I'm coming to see you just so I can take a ride. I see them all the time. I just Let's need to get it. In one ride one. Yeah.
They're so much fun to
so,
drive.
So one quick question. What is the most recent exciting book you've read?
Ooh, that's a good question. I have to look that up.
Something you've listened to or something you've read. It could be
I gotta
fun
look in,
or fact.
I gotta look in my
You like me, I gotta look at my Audible library and see what I've listened to lately.
Let's see. It's actually, you know what? I went on a little, I go in these weird stretches where I listen to a ton of stuff and I read a ton of stuff and then I cut it out. And then I'm just like focused, probably implementing some of it. Let's see. You know what? This book I read a while ago, but Leadership and Self-Deception is probably one of the most like earth-shattering books.
Yeah.
Have you ever read The Obstacle is the Way? It's a book on Stoicism.
Nope, I have
that
not
book's
read it.
Good. That book's good. The obstacle is the way. Like, so the things, basically the concept is this, and this really plays well to what our conversation we just had about entrepreneurship. If the path is super easy for anything, then it's probably not good.
Yeah.
And it's going to be filled with people and competition. Think about drugs and alcohol. It's like, it feels good, but it's not, it's going to create a really rough road later. Because of your choices with those, right? And you can do that with everything. You can do it in business. Oh, look, everybody's starting this kind of business. I should start this kind of business. It's going to be a rough road. But then the obstacle, the hard road, the difficult road, the road to be different than everybody else, the road that nobody else is going on, the road that seems impossible, that is actually the way that you go, and that creates an easier experience later. And it'll, and part of it is because it makes you tougher, but also less people are going to be on that road. That's the basic gist of it. It's really good.
Yeah, I think anytime you look at something that's the easy road, that is not necessarily the best road, right? And it doesn't, it's kind of like when people, and look, I think there's a lot of good multi-level marketing out there. Don't get me wrong. I've seen great stuff. I use Advocare now. And so I've seen great ones, but there's too many people that are just going to get rich quick, right? They're going to jump in. And if that's what you think, it's probably not going to happen, right? It's always, I've been reading Redeeming Your Time. It says 7 biblical principles for being purposeful, present, and productive. Good author. Because I think all we have is some time. We got to figure out how to use it better as well. So it's always a top of mind thing. Well, Gary, it's been fun. Always good to catch up, and excited about what Gary has next. I'm just following you on your new Tesla and your new Chewbacca look. I hope you don't mind my comments on all your social media.
Oh yeah, no, I love it. Yeah, I love it. I love the comments.
All right, Gary. Hey, great to see you, and thanks for joining us on a little Do Hard Stuff, because running a business is hard stuff. Have a great week.